Guys, hey, it's the Infuse Show coming to you from New York, New York. It's a hell of a town. The Bronx is up and the battery's down. But the Infuse Show is here in the Javits Center. Francesca, Mike, we're back.
We are back.
7 months later, 6 months later?
Yeah, man.
It's a lot warmer. I know that.
It's a lot warmer. It was kind of a how would you describe setting up this time?
Sweaty.
Yeah, it was a pressure cooker, my man.
Yeah, we got it done, though.
We got it done. We're here. The show has just opened, and we're recording live a special episode today because, look, we're in an emerging market that people are so excited about here in New York.
They can't wait to sell.
They
literally
really can't. But I'm looking around, and I'm seeing we have possibilities in South Dakota, of all places, Texas, Georgia. Is making moves. Rhode Island just went.
Boom.
You know?
Way to go, little guy.
Delaware.
Womp, womp.
Yeah. Womp, womp.
Don't even go there.
But here's the thing. I thought it would be a good idea if you guys, since emerging markets are at the forefront of a lot of people's mindset here at this show, and for our listeners and for me, if you could tell me, if I'm going to operate in a new market, what do I need to understand? Because that's going to be a question you guys are going to answer again and again and again. Right. So might as well polish it up.
Yeah. I mean, this is the same advice that we give to people that work with us, basically, right, from emerging markets. And so how to get them set up as producers. And even with some retailers, we help them operate at a higher level of efficiency, I would say, and growth. So I think the most important thing to know before you get started is exactly what the landscape looks like where you are. What is the medical market that is closest to you? What is the recreational market that is closest to you? You got to know your competition. You've got to know the context in which you're operating.
Yeah.
So whether that's a border state or a county or something along those lines, where exactly are things as they stand now? That's, I think, the most important part, because that'll tell you a lot of information about what's selling, who's buying, what the competition is like. So context is very important as just a foundational layer of knowing and getting started and having success in an emerging market.
Yeah, that's critical. Because if you don't know that, you really don't have a sense of who you are or what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
The key one that jumps out at me, Francesca and Nick, is really understand the infrastructure that the state has set up for you. So if you think about the different states we've worked in, you know, we talk about Oklahoma a lot on this show.
Yeah.
Who didn't have, for the first 2 years we worked there, there was no metric at all.
No.
And there was no track
now
trace,
there is
nothing.
Metric, and the people are going closing doors, going out of business, they can't deal with it. It was essentially a legalized black market for 2 years. Now
it's a good way
now
to
it's compliant and and people can't deal.
People aren't happy.
But most states aren't going to go that way. They're going to have things established from the get-go. So understanding what's the compliance going to look like, what's delivery going to look like. Is there established distribution companies, like, say, in California, how they have things set up is unique versus other states? Or are you responsible for your own delivery? Because you think about some of the things we deal with is, you know, somebody wants to buy a small quantity or they want to see some product. It can be very expensive to get it all the way to a border town that, you know, is really interested, could be a great account for our clients, but it's logistically difficult. So understanding, like, how that infrastructure is, like, can you move product easily and efficiently at a reasonable cost? Like, that's huge.
Yeah. Can you send it, like, in Washington, you can send samples by mail, you know, but in other states, you potentially can't. So there's a cost structure, too, that you have to factor in when you're planning your, you know, launch.
How you can market, how you can,
definitely,
you know, can you put up billboards? Can you do, you know, what can you say, what can you not say?
Yeah.
All those things are state to state, town to town different.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have that foundational knowledge, I guess we've talked about it as before, like, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
And you're going to flounder around and probably ultimately go out of business.
And you also have to know, like, the culture of the area in terms of cannabis.
That's a good one.
Because
big time.
Sometimes it's about farming, and sometimes it's about, you know, cannabis, and sometimes it's about medicine, sometimes it's about novelty. It really depends on what the culture around cannabis is for that specific location. And sometimes, like California or Colorado, those are destination states. So obviously they become cannabis destination states and locations versus something like Oklahoma isn't really a destination state, or Washington state, certain areas aren't, you know, destination areas, but they might be more regionally. So, like, Texans find Oklahoma as a cannabis destination, you know?
Right.
So you have to know, really, everything that factors into what people are going to do in a buying decision.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's number one.
That's number one. It just makes me, when you talk about the different markets and you bring up markets that are highly structured, like a Washington or a California, it really, like, pains me now whenever anybody's like, well, yeah, you know, our Maryland's like the Wild West with their, I'm like, don't use that analogy unless you worked Oklahoma in the first 2 years.
Yeah.
That's the Wild West. We're making it up as we go along.
And it looks like New Mexico might be the same way.
It really does.
And Mississippi, too, potentially.
Yeah, Mississippi.
Is it Mississippi? It's Mississippi.
They
will
really
be there next year.
Yeah.
Canacon in Biloxi.
Oh, so that's right.
We'll be there.
In February.
Yeah. We know how to deal with these
legal
black markets.
Yes, we do. The legal black markets, we know.
We're like the Ghostbusters.
In a t-shirt.
Yeah. Welcome to the legal black market.
We just show up to the grower when they tell us this stuff sells itself. We just say, we're ready to believe you. Except we're not. Let's talk about the existing markets a little bit more. Let's talk about who's there and who's buying. All right. Isn't that, don't you need to understand those?
Yeah.
Who's going to be walking through your door?
Yeah. After you understand Absolutely. The market at large, you need to understand the customer. That's the next most important thing to know. Who exactly are you serving? Because right now we're in a period where everybody's buying cannabis. There isn't really one demographic. It used to be these, you know, males from 18 to 25 or something along those lines. And you can tell that by the marketing that happened really early on with the, you know, equating cannabis and sex was a big push, I feel like, early on. And you saw it in trade shows and with booth babes and stuff like that.
Right.
And
yeah.
Now
you
see women are growing in terms of buyers. LGBTQA community is growing in terms of buyers. These traditionally underserved populations are a big part of the cannabis movement. And so if they are a part of your buyer pool, of your customers, then you need to make sure you're serving them. Because what you're doing when you launch isn't about you once beyond product quality and compliance. It's really about your customers. So you have to know who they are.
Yeah, I think without knowing your customer, it's almost like not knowing your state, you know, to really be able to focus down and to dig into the demographic of where you're going to be located.
Yeah.
You know, just in a small state like Delaware, there's pockets that a store in Newport would be drastically different than a store in Greenville.
And every state has those
things. And the stores that do it well in non-tourist areas, I mean, the ones that do it well serve their very, very hyper-local market extremely well. And they're a part of the community, they're part of the fabric, and they're viewed as an extension of that community. And to really focus on that and to understand who you're going to serve, as you're saying, Francesca, is so critical, because otherwise you're a fish out of water, and you're sending a message to people that aren't listening or aren't going to receive it because they're just not in the same wavelength.
It's not for them.
Yep.
Yeah, if they don't see themselves in that messaging, how would they ever see themselves as a buyer of your product?
Yeah, when we were saying this in the pre-show, I mean, if you think about every state that opens up, the first, I don't know, 3-6 months is like the honeymoons. Part of it. Everybody's hyper about it. They're so excited. Everybody's buying this and that. And the goal of it needs to be, your focus needs to be not that first 6 months. It's how to survive and how to thrive after that by building your market and by building your customer loyalty with your area. And that's where the real focus needs to be in terms of sustaining yourself and then standing out amongst the other people who likely will come and go.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it all the time.
If you look at New Jersey, like Nick and I went to two dispensaries on the day that Jersey went rec legal on 421. And everybody in both two dispensaries, and I wouldn't say anybody had a customer persona. There was no identity.
Yep.
To the customers that the store was trying to speak to. It was just, we're new, we sell weed, come and get it. And that's very much how a lot of the dispensaries operate. It's very much how a lot of the growers operate. If I grow fire, it sells itself. We hear that all the time. It's not true. I'm sure you grow fire, it doesn't sell itself.
Yeah.
So it's about like making sure that you're not just there as the flash in the pan when things are good, like you said, Mike. It's you're there for the long haul. And so when somebody comes in, they feel seen, they feel served, they feel like they get what they need from you because you know who they are and what they need. If you don't deliver that experience, you're not going to get people that are going to stay true to you time and time again. And all it takes is you're in a price war. You're in, you know, like basically you become a commodities dealer. And that's never a good place to be when you're trying to get, you know, the biggest bang for your buck.
Right. And I feel like humans by nature are creatures of habit.
Yeah.
So when states open up, people are going to check out multiple stores and see what the experience is. And that's this opportunity for the store and then for the products within the store to start creating that foundation of customer loyalty. Because ultimately, people are going to settle into one store probably or maybe two stores. But it's like their go-to. It's like where you guys get Italian on Sunday night.
Gotta go
to
Italian.
Like that's your thing. Yeah. You know, for you to go to Mrs. Rubino's, you did it the other night, and look at you. Look how upset you are.
I'm still trying to recover from that one. It didn't. Oh, man. It's not my kind of red sauce. I want to just kind of quantify that one point. It all goes back to this one thing with me is, are you into the culture? Because you can tell, it sticks out like a sore thumb when you walk into a store where there is no real culture. I think you said it a few minutes ago, Francesca, where you said, well, we have we.
Yeah.
To me, I'm fascinated by how many stores operate with that premise. They don't operate for long, you know, they don't operate for long. But I want to go into the store, I want to know, this is the bud tender telling me, hey, have you tried Chem Dog? You know, you haven't, this stuff, we can't keep it on the shelves. And I go home and I look up some stuff. And I'm like, this dude actually knows the plant and he knows what's selling in other markets. And I don't know. It's such more genuine experience to me.
Well, I mean, think about the way that I want to be sold to as a well-versed cannabis consumer is going to be very different than the way my mom wants to be served as a novice cannabis consumer and at a totally different age and demographic. And so she needs somebody to walk her through the process, to let her know the expectations, to be able to take that time with her. Whereas I'm here like going, ooh, I know what I like, and if I want this experience, and this experience, and I like this, you know, edibles, I don't like pre-rolls, and I'm into, you know, dabs, What do you got for me? And I go solventless, baby, only solventless. You know, they need to know how. That's a different customer than my mom is going like, I don't know, what pre-roll should I buy? So you've gotta serve. You gotta know who you're serving.
Okay, yeah. So I guess we're fine tuning this then. So tell our audience, what can I do? Markets get flooded with new businesses. How can I make my business stand out?
That's the big ticket question. That is what we work with people on because it is competitive as all get out there. So you need to be able to stand out. And that doesn't have to mean a big budget. It doesn't mean you need big, deep pockets.
Yeah.
It means you have a strong sales infrastructure. And when we say a strong sales infrastructure, we mean that the sale doesn't happen at the point of transaction. That's not the sale.
That's not the final piece of the puzzle.
That is, yeah. That's the transaction. That's the money exchanging. But the sale happens at all times. When your customer is Googling, you know, dispensaries near me, and they see your logo, they see your name, they see your tagline, they see your website, they see your product offering, do you have something to buy online? Like, they see what you have. That's a sale process. If you then go into the store and they talk to someone and they're ignored or they're treated with respect, that's part of the sales infrastructure. It's everything. The packaging that they're looking at. You know, if it's cartoony and, you know, blazy and 420-ish and all of that versus if it's elegant and sleek and modern, that's part of the sales. The sales infrastructure is every part of the sales, everything that makes this helps make the sales decision. So having a good sales infrastructure is the crux of it. And we can break that down into like the actual like fundamental pieces, the high level ones. So.
Yeah, I mean, you, excuse
sorry,
me.
Sorry, I kind of covered a bunch of them.
You touched on brand and packaging, and those are the two that are when people think about sales. Those are the two most obvious ones that people think about is the brand and the packaging, and that's how you can really differentiate.
Yeah.
And I love your breakdown of the sales infrastructure, because there's a lot of things that really aren't in the sales bucket,
mm-hmm.
so to speak. They fit in the operations realm or in the marketing realm, but if you do a crummy job at those things, it impacts
your
ability
for you.
To sell. Yeah. So things like distribution, you know, we touched on it earlier, like how are you going to get that sample to a buyer so they can evaluate you as a first time producer? How are you going to get, if they want to come back and they love it, how are you going to get it to them on an ongoing basis so that they know what to expect, when to expect it? And distribution, and I think the other one that goes with that hand in hand is communication.
100%.
And the one I feel like where we've been most successful with our clients is opening their eyes to how important communication is, to let buyers know that, oh, your material's arriving tomorrow, or what day do you want it to arrive, and we'll make sure it does arrive then.
Yeah.
And a reminder, it's coming tomorrow. Oh, and after it arrives, how was it? Was everything good with your order? Like those little things, that's the difference between like good and great.
Yeah.
In exceptional businesses,
because
it's so easy and it's free.
It is.
But no one does it. And so it's like for us, it's like the low-hanging fruit when we're working with people. We'll be like, how about sending them an email or a text or a phone call? And people are like,
it's that simple to stand out.
Yeah.
It's to be communicative, to have a good brand, to have good packaging, to have solid, reliable distribution. Those four things alone are going to help you stand out as long as you are consistent with them.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, consistency, that has to be there. If you're not consistent, then a one-off, sir, you're not doing
it. Forget it. Yeah.
Yeah. The one I think that we've been noticing lately, because more of our clients are moving to it, is having online ordering platform.
Oh.
So whether it's LeafLink or Apex or one of the other systems out there.
Yeah.
That, to me, is a really, really great way to allow your brand to stand out, stay in front of purchasers, allow them to purchase when they want to purchase.
Yes.
Whether it's at midnight or 4 a.m. or 2 p.m.
Right.
So being available to them when it's convenient for them is really an important aspect of that, and making it easy for them to see your product, see your information, all that. Like, so that to me is a big differentiator, a way to stand out that I think in emerging markets, people don't do it right away. They kind of shoestring it and try to do as much as they can, as possible.
Because
but this is one for $300 or $400 a month.
Yeah.
You're immediately at the upper echelon in terms of your stature and how you appear, your perception and persona as a producer.
Yeah.
Looking at the way stores operate, it's a great point with online ordering, Mike, because looking at the way stores operate, in particular for the last, 20 months or so, I think it's going to become a standard. And if you don't have that, and I know a lot of these stores are small staff, and like, when we implement that, it takes all these hours. You're going to lose a bunch of sales if you don't take that time now to go into that.
Absolutely.
And it's another example of people not factoring the long-term wins into the short-term pain.
Yeah.
Yes, it might take some time, some energy, some resources to get that up and running, to load all your strains and your testing and your pictures and all of that, make sure somebody's handling it actively, proactively, and managing that. But guess what that's going to yield? Do some calculations and figure out what that ROI is. When do you make that money back? And I can guarantee you it's going to be a whole lot faster than you think it is. And eventually, you're right. I think it's going to be table stakes. It'll be weird if you don't have an online ordering platform eventually.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an important one. Because your whole job as the producer, in order to stand out, make the purchaser's job as easy as possible. That's how you stand out. You make their lives easier. Honey, you are going to be their best friend and their biggest customer. So you've got to have that. And I think the other piece that almost nobody is doing is education. So when we say education, you have to look at it. If you're the producer, you have two buyer pools that you have to educate. One is your purchasing managers, your stores, your retail people. So you need to be able to reach the stores and educate them on your farm. why they should carry your product, why you're a good fit. Show them you did research on their store, you know who buys at their store, and you say, listen, I know you're serving the women, the LGBTQA, the men, the whatever, and being like, and this is a really good strain for this group, or
for
this is
audience.
The brand that speaks to them, and so I think you're offering something valuable by carrying my product into your store. And then you can say it's because it's cleaner, or it's better, or it's great percentages, great terpenes, great whatever it is. What is your difference? That you take a portion of your proceeds and you support the same cause as the dispensary. You have education, you have flat, you're like, my product, I'm not just dropping off a product that's kind of labeled. It's like, I'm giving you all the key tools you need to sell this so that it doesn't have to sell itself. You're
right.
Going to be the one that has all the information. And then your other buyer pool are your consumers. Even if you're a producer that doesn't actually have any direct consumer purchasing, you need to educate consumers. You need fans of your products and your brands, and you need to tell them how to get to you more easily and how to make basically more accessible to them by saying, go into stores and ask for my brand. Go in and ask for, GG Happy Farms
right.
or, some whatever it is. And then you know that the consumers feel seen, they feel served by the actual producer. That speaks volumes, because you expect to be sold in a store, but to have a farm tell you why you should connect with them or to show you what they value and what they have, and then you connect with that, that's going to be brand loyalty out the yin-yang.
Yeah, I love the point there, Francesca, in terms of creating consumer pull for your product through education, through having farm tours.
Yes.
Yeah. Simple things like that, that the connection you're building is what you almost term as like a lifetime value of a customer for this. And that is very, very strong and is very rare. We don't see we see it more in mature states, I think,
mm-hmm.
is where I've seen some of that, but
because
not a ton of it.
Because they've had to compete longer.
Yeah, but imagine if somebody does that in an emerging state and they come out of the chute by doing those things on day one and say, this is the foundation of what we're doing. And education, both in terms of creating consumer demand and also educating the bud tenders that are ultimately going to be suggestive selling for your brand. And if somebody has a strategy and they're consistent of doing the work, that's like building a foundation for your company that's going to really, really be strong and pay dividends, like you said earlier.
Totally, totally. I think I was in Nevada, and we went to a hemp farm, actually, and we saw the guy had, aquaponics with trout, I think, in there, mm-hmm. and it was something about, the poop of the trout helps fertilize the cannabis or something along those lines. Like, it was mm-hmm. this whole, closed-loop trout water thing that I didn't understand, but I was like, that's really cool. And why wouldn't you share that with people? Why wouldn't you have people come in and feed the fish or whatever it is? And being like, there could be an interactive, maybe not the kids, but it could be an interactive experience so that you're at full transparency, because that's, people don't trust what you say. They trust what you do. So you need to be able to show them what you're doing, not just say it. And I think that's going to be the biggest education piece for producers.
Yeah, I think that's a really strong one to end kind of the infrastructure. And that's something, like you said, Francesca, we've had a lot of these recently where people want to do better. They started off in some emerging states and they're over that hump. And now they're a year into it and they're like, I don't want to just sell to brokers anymore and have them basically white label my passion and my work that I put into this. So how can I take that to the next level? And the sales infrastructure is a huge component of that, and really touching on all those key components within that and having a grasp and understanding to fulfill against those is huge.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, product quality, consistency, what you're doing, that's king.
Quality is number one, always, assuming compliance isn't an issue. And then sales infrastructure. It's got to be number two. It's got to be your second priority.
Yep.
If it's not, you're never going to see repeatable, sustainable growth, which is what we all need in this industry that is so volatile. Branding, packaging, communication, distribution, what else do we say? Online ordering and education are kind of like the things that
got them all.
Yes. I only peeked once at the sheet.
I'm glad you grouped them together for us for easy access to those points at the end. So we don't have one
yokel out there. Our girl say something about letting Mike and the fish take his dump on the cannabis.
No, no. So we bullet point them at the very end there. Excellent insight for the listeners.
I want
this
Nick
show,
to do
guys.
A whole episode in that voice.
Just in that voice?
See, I want him to do a whole episode in all of his voices. He can have the Delco voice, that voice, his old.
Send a gun thing into another voice where we. We can talk about
it's
all sorts of things.
It's going to be the After Dark episode.
Well, now I'm just thinking of all the people I've met here and who just, I met characters here. Right? Remember that guy, Frank, who was, who will write email? You will write email? I will write. I was like, I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
You damn well better send that email or you're going to get roughed up.
I know. I was, the email's been sent. It's been sent. This was great, guys. We're kicking off another year at CWCB Expo, so thanks for bringing the Infuse show back, because I always love getting caught between the moon and New York City. I know it's crazy, but it's true. And this was a wonderful talk with you guys.
It's
a lot of fun.
Always a good chat. Always. Now we get to go talk to some, hopefully, people who are going to be needing some sales infrastructure help in the emerging market of New York City.
Absolutely.
Or New York State, I should say.
New York State, Empire State of Mind, here on the Infuse Show. Mike and Francesca are with me as always. Producer extraordinaire Frankie Fifth Year is here, and my God.
Did you see what Frank did to that cutlet last night?
Dude. Yeah, I guess
no,
we should No,
because it happened so fast. It was there and then gone.
Yeah. I was going to report a crime. My man destroyed that thing. So we did it all in this one. Even a little minor indirect shout out to Attilio's too. I love that Mike threw that out there.
Had to.
I got to get back there. Now I got to get back.
I heard your band. Since they know now that you stepped out on them, you might be in the middle
of
a suspension.
Seinfeld with the barber.
Yeah.
I was wearing a wire. I was only there to get information on taking that other place down.
Here's doing competitive market research, which we do encourage you to.
There it is. Look, you get it all here. Tying it right back to the point. All right, guys. Look, I want you to enjoy the rest of this show. CWCB Expo, it seems like they put together another great one. So thank you for taking the time. I'll see you back in Delaware. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye,
see
y'all.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Season 1 of Dope History is now available at dopehistory.com. Dope History weaves you through the lives of those who have been touched by cannabis or have had an influence on the events that shaped our laws or relationships with this plant. You'll hear tales from Frenchie Cannoli, Keith Strop, Eddie Lepp, Tom Alexander, Ed Rosenthal, Wolf Seagall, Jorge Cervantes, and Tommy Chong. Available now at dopehistory.com.